Right. So hopefully everyone had a good break. We are back on track, or a little away. So Adam Kinney will be talking about Expression Blend. And there were a lot of questions earlier on Twitter traffic if these sessions were being recorded. All the sessions, the content, the demos, everything will be recorded, packaged in an event in a box model, and will be available. If you want to repurpose some of the content to present at a local user group, shoot me an email, mithund@microsoft.com. I'll keep that going on the Twitter traffic as well. And Adam, the floor is yours now. Thanks.
Ooh, hold on 1 second. As much as I like the Twitter comments, I don't want to show them while I'm talking. Okay. What's that? I already flashed them up? Oh, okay. Okay. So I got here early so I could make you a slide. I hope that you like it. It's covering the talk, and it's actually a couple slides in front. Anyways. So what we're going to cover today is the tool called Expression Blend. It's a part of the Expression Studio tool set, and it's labeled as the designer side of the tools. And what I'm going to show you today is a look at Silverlight through the eyes of Blend, but also some of the features and some of the aspects of Silverlight that Blend can do for you as a developer that is a lot harder to do in Visual Studio. So I'd like to ask real quick, how many of you here in the room are or do design? So you don't have to be a designer. Oh, wow. I'm impressed. Very good. Okay. And then I wish I could ask the online people, but I'll just open up Twitter again and find out. So I'm just going to go through Blend and show you off what it can do. So let me switch over and bring up Blend. It's pretty quick. There we go. Now, first thing to notice, those are a lot of panels and they're really large. That's because unfortunately I'm presenting at 1024 by 768. Hopefully you have monitors bigger than that, so you won't have this problem, but I can still demo. So the first thing I'm gonna do is start from scratch. And you can see here that Blend is a design tool, and I say design because it's for doing design, not just for designers, but doing UI design and development. It's a tool for Silverlight and WPF. And the team does a lot of work to try and make sure that even though those are different platforms, you get the same experience within Blend. So we'll just focus on the Silverlight side right now, and I'm going to start a new project. And you can see I'm greeted with a drawing surface here that's obscured by some of this large panel. And I have a couple of very useful panels. The first one here is the Objects and Timeline panel. And what this allows me to do is it's a visualization of my object tree, or my element tree. It's actually a visual tree. And why this is so important in the Silverlight world is that a lot of the XAML you've seen, I know Tim showed you some of the complex XAML syntax, it's all very tree-based. You get into a lot of trees, you can get very deep. So what the Objects panel does for you is visualizes that, allowing you to navigate the tree. Over here you can see the Properties panel. This is all of the properties that are exposed that you can set, exposed for each of these controls. Right now I have the grid selected. One of the fun things about this Properties panel is to make up for the fact that there's so many that you can select, they have this nice search style filter. Or not style, but I search for style. But it allows you just to type a couple letters and then it will leave up the few properties. Like this one is not very useful, but it's everyone with a B. So let me type width. And now I can see three properties that all have width in them. So that's one way to navigate even the properties that are available. But what I'd like to start off with is some gratuitous graphics and some spinning cubes. because I saw some of the Twitter tweets, especially from Scott Kuhn, that said they'd like to see that. So, using the different drawing tools, you can see that this is like any vector-based drawing tool that you're familiar with, if you are. I have different shapes available. I have a pen tool, a lot of different brushes. So what I'm going to do here is just show off some of the basic drawing functionality. So I put out a circle here. You can see I want to change the stroke so it's more visible. I can filter the property list. I need to change the fill here so I can make this pop. And what I'm going to do just briefly is draw like an emoticon. Everybody's familiar with an emoticon, a smiley face or something. And you can see here I have the fill selected, and this is my brush editor. And there's a bunch of different brush types. There's the exciting null brush, solid color brush, and the linear brush, and that's the one I'm going to use. Or actually the gradient brush, and now I'm going to use the radial brush on this. So these are my gradient stops, which allow me to alter the gradient. And a lot of what I'm trying to show off here is just the fact that once I get this brush created, I'll flip over to the XAML that's produced by this. And then that's where you can start to decide if, you know, this is something that you want to do by hand. And most likely, it won't be. So you can laugh, but the funny thing is, we used to not have Blend. So there were some of us that learned all this stuff by hand. That was really fun. Okay, so I have my nice brush transform here. I actually don't think that's enough contrast, so let me really change it so you can see what's going on. Okay, so, that's green, sorry. Okay, so now I have my basic circle. I need to draw some eyes. You notice that the brushes, so there's the fill brush as well as the stroke settings, are carried over so you can continually draw using the same patterns. Now this one is the eye, so actually I need to get rid of this, and we'll have, actually I need to really change this, so we don't want them to look too sick. And we need the pupil, which is brown. Let me switch over to a solid color for this. And then one more, I need kind of the light reflection, a refraction. I don't know which one it is, but it's important.
Maybe subtly need an axis to draw it.
What's that?
The axis, x and y axis.
The x and y axis of the elements? So what you can see up here is it's showing off the selected, this is the selected element, it's my ellipse, you can find in the objects panel, and it's inside of a grid container. So similar to XY, but it's actually called margins, and that's because you can set margins based off of every side. So this is defining the position by the margins that are set. And that's another thing to really look at is when you're doing stuff in Blend, Blend is trying to help you out as much as possible. It's trying to assume what you want. There are things like, this is a grid, so I could add a grid column. I have two columns now. And what Blend has done is it said, well, he probably doesn't want that smiley face to be cut in half, so I'm actually going to extend it into that column. So now it has a column span of two. So Blend does try and preserve your initial design as you edit. So let me remove that. But what I'd like to show here is that as I select all of these ellipses, I have my eyeball, and I can right-click and say group into, and I'm going to put these in another grid. And we'll just call this left eye. And this is me naming the object, so now I have an instance name for this. But another thing that I want to do is find the pupil. And what I can do here, wow, is I can right-click this and say convert to new resource. And what I'm doing here is I'm taking that brush, and in this case it's the white to gray brush, and I'm going to save it as a resource, which is similar to like a CSS class, so I can reuse it more than once and only edit it in one place. So we'll save it to a resource, and I'll call it eyeball brush. Okay, so now I can take this left eye grid and copy it, and now I have two eyes. It's very exciting. But to show off that, to show off the resources, you can now see that a different editor has come up for the brush. So this was the original editor, but because it was bound to a resource, it's saying whenever this brush changes that I've defined once, change this element as well. So now I have this eyeball brush, and I can bring it up, the editor, and let me pick, hold on here. Okay, so what I can do now is make him look very sick, or like he's been up all night trying to prepare for a presentation. But you notice that when I changed that once, it actually applied it to both eyeballs, because it's linked to the same resource, it's the same brush. So let's undo that and make him healthy again. And then just a couple other things that you can see with the basic drawing. Here's your rectangle. I'm going to get rid of that stroke because I don't want it. Using this, and this is something that I recently wanted to come up with a name for, because if you look, Blend has a lot of stuff going on here because it's a very full-featured platform. So this little white square, which is sometimes disabled, it's sometimes green, it's sometimes yellow, I didn't know what the name was. So as I was typing out these tutorials, I kept saying click the small white square, or I think in the actual help it's called an advanced options properties square. That was really big, so I'm going with property peg. So does anybody like that idea, just calling it a peg? Is that good? Yes? Okay, we got two yeses. So I'm going to click the peg, the property peg, and reset this back to its default of 1. And now I'm going to change the fill to something completely different. I want a linear gradient brush, and I'm going to drop that just so I can see the difference here. And some of the nice things here is that if you've done UI design before, and you've gotten into the world of like Web 2.0, we're into rounded rectangles now. So don't make your UI look so painful and sharp. So one of the nice things here that's just built right into this is, on the rectangle control, is the radius X and radius Y. So you can see that if I set these both to 10, I now have a rounded rectangle. So that's exciting. But what if I want to make him not look so stark? I actually want to make him look a little happy. I can go ahead and just take this from a rectangle object to a path object. And then just like any other vector path object, I get points. So you can see I have all these different points to manipulate. I can go ahead and make him look a little happier. Okay. You can draw a polygon, yeah. Yep. Actually, with the pen tool, you can draw just a path as well, just a custom path. So, so now I have this collection of elements that are making up this face. And you can see as I select them all in the objects panel, I'm going to group all of these into another grid, which I will now call my just face. And so these are, that's just a brief look at some of the drawing tools. And along with that, I think you've also seen this, but I want to show the transforms. Of course, you have rotate, you know, which is great. Scale, just as you would expect. Well, actually, that one's not. Because, okay. So, if I do skew, in the advantage of this is the fact that this is all visual. So you're doing these transforms, and with Blend, you get this instant visual preview. Another thing that Blend does very well is I'm going to change the workspace here to the animation workspace. And this is a new feature in Blend 3 where you can actually customize and save the workspace. And again, this doesn't look very good because it's on 1024 by 768. So, but what I can do, again, this is another thing that I'm going to add a new storyboard. And designing animation without a GUI is, of course, very possible, but it's also very difficult and not very fun. So I'll show you just briefly the animation tools. So what I've done is I've dragged the timeline over to 1 second, and now I can change the position of the face. And you can see it scale back. If I had 2 keyframes, if you could really see, you could see the motion path that's enabled. But again, you can see what I've done here is I've transformed the position, and I've done that all very quickly with drag and drop. If we look at what this code looks like in XAML, and I'm going to have to move everything. So what I just did in like 2 seconds of drawing, you can see that here's the eyeball brush that we, it is white, interesting. But here's the storyboard. So you can see it says double animation using keyframe, begin time, blah, 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 all this stuff. Yes? That's a good question.
Can you repeat the question, please?
I will repeat the question. The question is, how do you do easing functions with the GUI? How do you use Blend to do easing functions? Easing functions are new in Silverlight 3, and they make your animation much more exciting and more natural because it changes it from a direct linear, let's all move like robots, to many of the different traditional tweening equations. So this is all built in, and I will bring back up the timeline panel. And if I click the keyframe, you can see right here I have my easing function dropdown. And then here I have a visual representation of how that equation will actually go. So I can do a real bouncy one. And it's just that quick. So that's how you do easing functions. Good question. So that's a brief look at animation. This is something, actually, let me show you what that looks like in XAML. It's not too much more, but you see here's the extra XAML code for that. So the question is, can you attach an event to the object? Yes, there are many events that you can attach to. Let me switch over and I will show you the list. And also, the object has events as well as the storyboard. So in storyboard completed, you could raise an event, or the event will be raised. Let me exit the storyboard here, just so we're back to the object. And I'm going to go back to the design workspace. When my computer responds. So there are a bunch of different events. Mouse left down, mouse left button down, all those type of events. This is fun. I think I just have faulty hardware. This happened to me at my last talk. Okay. This is great. I'm glad this is recording. I'm going to send this to my boss. Hey, I need a new laptop. The best part is he's probably watching in his office right now. I think it's at TIMS. Okay. So this is great. So it's completely frozen. We're going to start over. And we're going to have a chat. So how many of you are getting started with Silverlight? Like, this is new. Okay, good. Because I figured that First, I thought that there would be a lot of... I'm going to show you everything. I thought that there would be more developers here, but then also I figured a lot of you were just getting started. So I'm just showing off kind of at a high level some of the concepts so you know that they're there. This has just been the basic, like, drawing tools, transformation, animations. It's all, you know, Silverlight One Day stuff. I'm not going to show you video. I think you've seen it plenty. The easing function stuff is new, but most of that has been there. It's getting better, though, as we add things like plane projection, which is like 2.5D, or otherwise called like postcards in space.
Some of your videos doesn't work. I tried last night.
You tried to do that on video? Oh, so the comment is you were trying to watch a video on my site and the URL's missing?
On
the Microsoft site. Oh, okay. We have a lot of sites. Which one was it? Okay. It's a different conversation, I know. New password. Everybody can watch how many characters I have. Okay. So we talked a bit about... Oh, you have a question. Sure. So the grid control is a container control. All of our container controls inherit from panel. And basically, the panel has layout and a children collection. Grid is one of them. It's pretty nice because it is kind of like what you wish an HTML table would do. It is has good support for columns and rows and margins. The other container controls are like a canvas, which is just basic XY positioning, and it doesn't do anything to the children, where the grid will say, hey, I'm this big, and this button doesn't care how big he is, so I'm going to make him as big as I want to. The canvas is just like cool with everything. You know, it's not going to change your size. It's just basic XY positioning. The grid is the most complex. Canvas is the most basic. In between there, you have stuff like a scroll viewer, where it will stay a size, and then even if it's child gets larger, it will add scroll bars. So in HTML, it's kind of like a div with overflow set. And then there's also a stack panel, which is just which direction do you want me to stack your stuff. And it supports, which is actually very useful. If you think of like a menu on the top of an application, that's like a stack panel, horizontally oriented. And that supports margins, so you can separate them. And then finally, there's the border. And the border control is an interesting one where it can only have one child. And really, it does just what it says. It wraps a border around an object. And it supports rounded rectangle as well. So you can see we're really hooked on that. So yes, I'm definitely going to get some new hardware here as I'm slowly bringing up Blend again. But what I really want to get to is some of the more complex stuff. Silverlight and WPF, something that's inherited from WPF, its bigger brother, the client for building Windows applications. Silverlight has this concept of lookless controls. And what that means is that it wraps all of this functionality as far as like events and everything that, all the interactivity, it wraps up into a class. And then it just provides a template. So you can get to the point where, which I'll show you when this comes up, you can actually re-template any of the controls because they're written that way so you don't lose the functionality. You can envision something like a checkbox. A checkbox has an on and off state where the check mark, it's either checked or unchecked. So you could actually reskin that and make it look like a light bulb and turn the light bulb on or off. And you would gain, by reskinning the checkbox, you maintain all of the events as far as like mouse down and the check state, but you can reskin it to look like whatever you want. So let me start with that. We'll start a new project, another new one, and I will show off the concept of reskinning controls. So a basic one would be a button. And There's two different concepts that we're using to explain what we're doing here. So if I have this button, okay, you can see that what it's done now is it's drawn itself using its default template. These are the default templates that come with Silverlight. In the Silverlight toolkit, there's actually a couple extra themes, so you can add that in if you don't want to do it yourself. But what it's done here is it's exposing all of the properties that it has, that the control exposes. You can see I have background. So what I'm going to do is change background to red. And what you can see is it changed the background, but it's actually just a gradient stop on a linear gradient. It didn't change the whole background to red. It's only changed part of it. And there's a few other things I can do to skin this. You can see here I have this border thickness. I can go down to the text and I can say, well, I actually want this to be really big. So let me change the font size. And I want the font to be purple, because that is a good color. What is this? Okay. So now I have this button. And what I've done is I've changed properties that are exposed by the button. And that's what we call styling. So I've styled this button. But you've seen the basic functionality of the button. It's got mouse over states. It has all these different states. And then also back to the question, why did the red only change that little piece of the element, and how can I change the whole background of the button to red? So what I'm going to do is draw out another button. And again, another reason that I'm talking about this is because this is another feature that is, it's much easier to edit templates in Blend because you get that live preview as well as some of these mechanisms I'll show than doing it hard coding in Visual Studio. So I'm going to right click on this button and say edit template, and I want to edit a copy. And there's two different choices there, because I could just start from empty, just starting from scratch and define it completely myself. But I want to edit a copy so I have this base to start with. And actually I'm going to cancel, because what I want to do first is go back and change that background property to red. And then we're going to investigate and figure out what's going on here. So I edit a copy. I don't care about the name right now. And now you can see a couple things have changed. My object panel has switched over to the button style. So I'm not actually editing my main page. It's not my old object tree. I'm editing the template. You can also see that up here where they have this breadcrumb menu to let you know where you are. You're actually editing a template. So now if I go down here, I can see this background gradient. Okay. So this tree is the tree that makes up the template. You can see as I click through, content presenter is the text. I have different background elements. Disabled element, these are all turned off because they're only turned on when they're in that state. But if I click this grid, you see now that the property peg has changed to be yellow, and that's because it's bound. And it is bound to the template properties. So the writer of the button control has exposed this property called background, and using binding, it's bound it to this grid in the template. So I could also choose other exposed properties, but just to show this off, I will take this background and I will bind it to the background property. And you can see now I have this red border, because it's bound to that same background property we set outside of the template. So let me show the XAML for this. Let me remove this. And this is going to look like a lot of XAML, and this is another reason to use something like Blend especially when you're learning and just trying to visualize what's going on here. So now I am within the template. And this is just another resource, just like the brush we showed earlier, because I'm defining this template in line. And I have the grid, I have the visual states, which I'll go to next. But if I go back down to here, you can see here's that border. And let me bring it on the screen. The second button has a red border now. So here's the border, and the background is set to template binding background. And that's referring back to when we were on the actual main page and we set it to red. So this is how it's transferring the colors down. So it allows the consumer of the button to set some of the properties on the template. So I'm going to switch back into design view. And I want to show off the states of the button. And get my objects panel back. Okay, so you have something like a button where I just undid the background binding so we could see a little better. And if I bring up the states panel, this is a concept within Silverlight that allows you to define different states of your control. And the great thing is that this object called the Visual State Manager will manage the changes between states for you. So if you go through here, you can see we'll go to mouse over, and now it's bright blue. And if I go down to the objects, you can see I'm in the mouse over state here, and it has these little red indicators to let me know that these are the controls, these are the elements, and the properties of those elements that have changed. So this one, the opacity has been set to 100, where by default it's 0. So it's saying when you go to the mouse over state, change this background animation to opacity of 100. So if I go through these states, you can see, like disabled adds this kind of white faded out block. But this is one way where you're handling, you don't have to handle all the events actually. The visual state manager is the one who's changing all the states for you. And one of the nice things about this is that here's the return of the easing functions. So right now it's just base linear. But I could say, actually, I want this to bounce in. And I keep using bounce because it's the most noticeable, even on a 300K streaming media. So now what I've done is I've said, okay, when you go from base, well, actually, when you go to the mouse over state, no matter what state you're in, this isn't a custom one, I'm sorry. So when you're going to a state, I want them all to bounce and to take 1 second. So you can also see here that there are two different state groups. And the reason for that is these are independent of each other. So a button could have focus, and the mouse could be over it or it could be off. So state groups allow you to say, I want to change certain elements, but some of them are independent of the other ones. So now what I want to do is also add a custom transition. And what this is going to do now is when I say the default transition is to bounce in for 1 second, and now if I mouse over and go back to normal, which is like a mouse off, then instead I want you to bounce in out, and we'll just put a lot of bounces in there. So I can also set custom transitions between states. So I have the default for the whole state group, and then now this custom transition from mouse over to normal. So if I run this, I'm not going to click the window menu because that crashes my machine. You will see that I still have the default button up there, which was the one that I just styled. So when I roll over this one, it instantly changes to blue, and then I roll off. It instantly disappears. It's using the default template that I just styled some of the properties. Now this one is my custom designed one. So now when I roll over, it bounces, it slowly fades in, and then I roll out, and it's a different fade out. And unfortunately those are kind of subtle, but I'm going to change that so we can really see it. You can see that these are the properties that were changed in the default template. But I actually want to also change something like the content presenter. So that way, in the mouseover state, it will flip that, just so we can see it a little bit better. So let me run it again. There you go. And it's different to roll back on. Oh, one more thing to show off here is just to emphasize the fact that the Visual State Manager takes care of this for you. I only defined a mouseover state, and that said change the blue to 100, to be 100% opacity. But I didn't define this. I just said go back to normal. And that's part of Visual State Manager saying, oh, well, I need to take that blue box and make it 0% again, just because I know the differences between the states. So that's skinning, where we just change properties of the control. And then we went into control templates, which is where I can completely redefine all of the elements that are used for the skin. And I want to show you something else called data templates, which are another type of template. There's a lot of templates involved. So this also shows off another function, which is really cool. Something new in Blend 3 is there's something called sample data. And what sample data does is, because of a lot of the applications that we're working on are very dynamic, there's lots of data, and it's not just static. We're not making brochure websites. Maybe some people are. That's okay. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to define a new sample data source, and I'm going to set a couple properties here. So I have this collection, and I'm going to call this name. And I have this property type dropdown, which allows me to really get defined here. So I'm going to say company name, and I'm going to call this email. Oops. I can set it to a string type of email, or format it as email. And then also a fun one here called, we'll just call it chair image, is what I meant. Okay. So now if I change this to image. Okay. So what I've done here is I've just defined like a sample schema for the sample data. And this is defining it from scratch, but another nice option with this is that you can output some of your data as XML and just hook it up right here where you see like import sample data from XML. So you could use live data, or not live data, actual data outputted to XML and then get that at design time in Blend. So now I can take this and just click this collection and drag it onto the art, or onto the grid here. And the tooltip says, create a list box and bind its item source property to collection. So there I have a fancy sample data. And what it's done is it's created the list box as well as defined a data template. So I had said, I want a chair image, email, and name. And then what Blend has done for me is it said, well, chair image is of image type, so I need an image control. And the rest are strings, so let me put in some text blocks for you. But what I can do is to redefine this, is I can go ahead and just get comfortable here in my constrained space. I can right-click and say edit generated items. And this is the item template. So based off the data, I want to change, and since it's already set, the option now is edit current. So I'm going to go in here, and you can see here's the stack panel where it's just vertically put everything in a stack. I actually want to change this, change the layout type into a grid, and I will add a column, and I'm going to scoot these over. That's the email. We'll put the name up top. And the nice thing there you can see is it's like real preview. I can see even outside of it, it's like all the templates are applied right away. And I want to make this bigger. Okay, so now I've, oh, and I want to make the grid a little bit bigger. I'm going to, well, okay. Bring this back down since it's tiny. So what I've done now is I've redefined this data template. Let me change this to something that we can see. Okay. That should be pretty visible. Okay. So, again, I'm up in the data template, so I can escape out of it, go back to the objects panel. And when I run this, I should have moved the list box. You can see that it's bound to the sample data. And this is something that I'm sure you'll be covered more, but we saw before you were binding properties. This, I'm actually bound to the objects. And if I go into here, you can see here is my data template defined. And then this is the image, and the source is bound to the chair image. So that symbol of syntax to actually bind these objects so that when your data is set, it'll automatically apply it based off the property names to the different elements. And building on that, another thing that you can do here, a different type of binding, is element binding, which builds on the concept of binding in general. So let me pull out a grid. Okay, I'll just get one from here. Okay, so when the list box was bound, because it was multiple items, it actually set the item source property. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to show a single example of data binding. So if I take this grid, I pull out the properties again, there's a property called data context. And that's saying out of, or what's the context of myself, which is the grid, and all of my children. So what am I bound to? So what I'm going to do is pull up data bindings. I'm going to go over to the list box, and I'm going to say the selected item, because it's just bound. These are just objects. I don't really need to know exactly which object, because the data binding mechanism, that syntax, takes care of a lot of this for me. So I'm going to bind the data context of the grid to the selected item of the list box, and then I'm going to add an image in there, an image control, and this image, you can see by default, I just double click, so added these default width and height of 100. I'm going to reset those to auto, and then I'm going to bind the source data binding to explicit. And I'm going to set it to chair image because the data, the grid, its parent grid, is bound to a sample data item from the list box. And now within that grid, I'm just going to say which property to go find. So here if I say chair image, then there's no preview, but that's because there's no selected item. So if I go back to here and say selected item, right now it's -1. If I set it to 1, then you can see there's a chair. And I'll bring it up here so we can see it in action. There's an error on the page. Okay. I'm actually going to get rid of that selected index. This was something that Tim Heuer was mentioning about not doing everything in the loaded event. Your code may not be ready. Okay, so now when I select and I have a bunch of items here, you can see that the list box is bound to my data source, which is all of these chair images, company names, and email. And using the data template, it's representing each object. And then what I said is over here on this like details grid, I'm going to set the data context of that grid to the selected item from the list box. So when the selected item changes through the data binding functionality, it updates right away. And that's what you'll see with binding, is that this is a lot of code that you won't have to write because of how data binding works. Data binding is one way, as well as you can also set it up as two-way. So I could actually have a text box here where I could type in and change the name directly, and it'll update all the other UI elements that are bound to that property. And I'm sure you'll see more of that today. So the last thing I want to show really quick is behaviors, partly because it was in the title of the session. But so I've shown you a lot of different things. There were a lot of templates. There was a lot of binding going on. Both concepts you really want to get a handle on. Blend makes that easier with some of its little property pegs and right-click menus. This is a concept that's also new with Expression 3, and it's called behaviors. And what behaviors do is they allow you to encapsulate functionality or interactivity, I guess I would say. So like different code that, again, you want to reuse. So if I take something like this sample, this lemonade stand, and here I have a cup control. Actually, I'm going to go into that cup control, and let me get rid of the filter. You can see here, this is the list of the 8 behaviors that come with Blend. And I'll show you how each of them work. The fun thing about this is that behaviors are something that anybody can write and reuse. And that's where you can find a lot of these behaviors available online in the Expression Gallery, or you can write them yourself for reusable code in your own applications. So what I'm going to do here is drag this control storyboard action onto the cup. And over here on the properties panel, you'll see the different properties that are exposed by the behavior. And I have a trigger type that I want to change to. I have a couple options here. There's a timer, key, which is for key input, storyboard completed, an event trigger. And I actually want to use the default. I want to mouse left button down. And the control storyboard action does just what it says, which is great about all these behaviors, is that they're very obvious. It controls the storyboard. So what I'm going to do here is say, on mouse left button down, play the drink lemonade storyboard. And then I also want to do a play sound behavior. And this time I'm going to set up a different trigger. And I'm going to say on the storyboard completed trigger. So this is where the storyboard will raise its event and say, hey, I'm done. Does anybody care? This behavior is paying attention to that. So I'm going to pick the drink lemonade behavior. And I'm going to pick this drink sound MP3 that I already added to the project. And I'm going to amp up the sound and undo this so you can hear it later. There you go. Okay. And then finally, once we're done enjoying the drink, I'm going to have it remove itself. And this I need to happen after the storyboard's done as well. And this is pretty simple. All you're doing here is saying, which element do you want me to remove? And I'm going to say the cup. So let me go back to this and back to the control here. And you can see one thing about the cup now, I'll zoom in a little bit, is it has a little exclamation point. That's because the cup control is a user control within this project, and Blend knows that you've modified it and you haven't built since then. So it's kind of a warning saying, hey, this might change, or something might be different here. But I'm going to drag this into the stack panel. You can see there's a stack panel here on the desk, or I guess it's a desktop, not like a regular desktop. And I'm just going to add a couple more. So you can see there the stack panel saying, I have a bunch of children. My orientation is horizontal. So let me ask the children, how big do they want to be? All these cups said they want to be like 40 pixels across. So it's positioned them that way. It's drawn them out horizontally. And then what I'm going to do on this stack panel is say, I want the fluid behavior. And what the fluid move behavior does is, on this type of layout where it's asking the cups, how big do you want to be? It will actually modify that layout behavior, and it will animate to that position rather than just instantly pop there. So I'm going to change this down, make it a little faster. This is a hours, minutes, time, or hours, minutes, seconds format for time. I don't know how often you'd use an hour for an animation, but okay. So now if I run this, we'll see the behaviors applied. There we go. So there they slide across the table. You see, I didn't write any code, I didn't write any animations or anything. That was all encapsulated in the behavior. And then now if I click on the cup, you can see that the drink lemonade animation happens. The remove element, it's removing the element, as well as the drink sound is playing. So those are some of the fun behaviors. There's also some kind of basic ones where I can take this hyperlink action, drop it onto the text block, and I can say, just as you would assume, on mouse left button down, go ahead and navigate somewhere. So I'm going to say my new favorite site, visitmix.com. And then also, I have this change property action. And what this allows me to do is, again, using the same trigger type functionality, I don't actually want to click on it. I want to say on mouse enter, I'm going to use this artboard element picker, and I'm just going to click on the text block. Oops, that didn't work out right. Let's go in this way. It'll be faster. So I click on the text block, and I want to change the opacity property. So bump this all the way up to 100 when I roll over it, when I mouse enter it. But then I want to set the opposite of that. So I pull out another change property action, and I say on mouse leave, text block is already set, and I want to change the opacity down to 20%. And this time I want to ease it, because eases are fun. Okay, so I'll run this real quick using my awesome hardware. And now you can see when I roll over it, the opacity changes. I click, it opens up a new window. No code written there, just drag drop fun. And then finally, for the completely gratuitous graphics talk, I will add, using my assets panel, you can see I have all these controls available. When I click project, it's actually looking in my custom code, my project code. And I have this thing called the balloon control. And I double click on it, and it adds balloons, which are fun. My kids love them. So now when I go back to behaviors, I have this really fun one called mouse drag element behavior, which I'll just drag on there. And there's no properties except for constrained apparent. But because it does what it says, it allows you to click and drag the element. And then I'm going to add also the final one, go to state. And with go to state, I'm going to go back here. And I'm going to change this to link this to a key or a key input. And you can see that I have all the keys available here, as well as modifiers, so you can do like control A or something. And then I want to change the state of the balloon control. And you can see right away, Blend says, oh, what states does that control have? And it only exposes those, so it's not confused. It's just going to pull up red, and then I'm going to pull up another go to state. Same thing as before. I'll say key trigger, and I'm going to say on key up, oops, I want the balloon control to go back to red, green, blue. So now when I run this, we'll test out the balloons. Everything slides across. All these behaviors are still there. It's exciting. Still good lemonade. Now I have mouse drag capability. With just seriously dragging a behavior on, I can now drag the element around. And then using the keys, I can animate between states. So behaviors are exciting. They're starting to catch on. You're starting to see more and more people create these. There's like physics-based behaviors. There's a lot of different energy in this area because it's really fun to share and reuse code, and this is a great way to encapsulate them. So that's behaviors. One more thing about Blend that has a lot of good stuff, or one of the good things about Blend is that on the welcome screen, where I define which project I want to open, it also has this thing called samples. So samples are some of the like official Blend 3 sample pack. And these are useful because they're good to demo, but also they're good to learn from. So you can see this one, going back to that lookless control concept. Let me build this. This is a PC game hardware menuing system, or browser, not menuing system. But you can see this kind of circular panel that I have here. There's the sounds. Took a little while that mouse is not working. The great thing about this, that list of titles spinning around this circle, is that this is just a list box. Same list box we used for that ugly chair demo. This is a list box where the templates are completely reset, and it's saying, you know, instead of just drawing them straight down, I actually went a whole circle. And the bonus of this is that you actually have all of the code for this. So the samples available with Blend allow you to see some like well done examples that you can learn from and take some of the code.
So you divide it 360 degree by that many text boxes, right?
Yep. Because what this does is it has actually a custom panel, so all the container controls inherit from that, and then it's just a circular panel, and it just takes the items and draws them around in a circle. So it looks like I'm out of time. Let me bring this back up really quick. Dun, dun, dun. Back to my exciting slides.
And while you're waiting for that, we have an online QA.
Yes.
Will Expression Blend 3 ever be available as a standalone? Right now, you need to purchase it as part of the package. It's more licensing. Do you want to take this?
Sure. Will it ever be available?
As a standalone one?
I don't know.
Great. So
I think it's a good... it's a good suggestion. Yeah. Sorry to make light of it. I have nothing to say that I know that, yes, you know, on December 14th it will be.
And I think it's available for MSDN users, right?
It is. Okay. Expression Studio is included with some of the MSDN subscriptions. There's certain levels there.
So. That should address it. Also, you described skinning a control using a control template. James actually wants to know how do teams work with control templates?
How do teams work with control templates?
Yeah.
So the templates, we saw that the base template of the button was saved as part of the control. So there's a way that when you're writing a control class, you define that generic template. What's the default template for this control? So if they're writing custom controls, they can define that. As well as when I made my own custom version of the template, it was just another resource. And once you start getting into reusing resources, then you have these things called resource dictionaries. And that's, if you're thinking of like CSS, that's like a CSS file where a bunch of these classes are defined. A resource dictionary is similar, and that's something that you can reuse across teams or projects. So,
thanks.
Okay. Any other questions out here? All right. Oh, there's one.
If I tweak a XAML file outside this expression blend, and if I try to open the XAML file using expression blend, what happens? Do you recognize? That's the first question. Second question is, if I do something which is not recognized by Expression Studio, does Expression Studio fail to load the file?
Yes. The question is, what happens when you change a file outside of Blend? And then also, will it fail if it's incomplete? The answer is, if Blend is open, it's watching the file. One of the things I didn't show there is how integrated Visual Studio and Blend are. So you can just right-click on the solution file, say Edit in Visual Studio. It'll open up there. If you then change the file in Visual Studio and you open up Blend, it'll prompt you and say, hey, this file's been changed. Do you want me to reload? And then when it reloads the file, it'll run through its validation and try and render it. And if it can't render it, it'll offer you as much of an exception as it can handle. And normally it's pretty good. I mean, it'll point you right to the problem. So, go ahead.
Adam, when you drew the emoticon, you used Blend to create the whole thing, which I guess is vector graphics.
Yes.
Well, and that's cool, but when, on my MSDN subscription, there is a studio, Expression Studio.
Uh-huh.
I was surprised to discover that now there's an expression design.
Okay.
So what are the use cases for design?
What's going on? Okay. So Expression Studio is the set of tools that Blend is a part of. Design is another product in that studio. And design is a much richer, there's more drawing capabilities there. And it has its own format called like dot design, but it outputs to XAML. So you could output to Blend your work done there. You have like more drawing controls. But another thing that brings up a great point is that Blend also has really great support for importing Photoshop files or Illustrator files. So you could create your graphical assets outside of Blend and import them in, or you could do it inside like I just did. So design is a tool for creating graphical assets, and yeah, it does work with Blend. Does that answer your question?
Well, I guess.
I'd say no, okay. So when to use them, is that what you're... It's when you reach the limits of what Blend can do. Blend has simpler drawing tools. Probably for a lot of the stuff you're working on, you can just do in there. I know, like, I find myself, like, the lemonade stand I drew in there, and that wasn't, it's not hard. It just depends on how familiar you are with vector drawing. But so if you get beyond that, you want to do some more complex things that you're familiar with, then you might move outside and to a different graphic tool, like design. So... Yes, that's why I say great support, because especially they really improved a lot of that in Blend 3. So like if you have text, it'll come in as a text block. If you have effects that are supported, something I didn't show off, pixel shader effects, it'll try and do that as well. So yeah, the import will try and maintain the objects that are existing. Yeah. So. Okay. Oh, yes. Not right now. That's something that we want to improve. It would be two-way. But right now it is kind of one-way push. Here I come. Watch out. So, yeah. It's and that's sometimes when you get into like a separate file to import to work it or, yeah, like a resource. But, yeah, it's still one-way.
Are there non-obvious things that developers should be using Blend for? I mean, I think of it as a visual tool, but are there times when, you know, a developer really should switch over from Visual Studio to Blend for these sorts of things?
Yes, I have a list of those right here. Let's see if I can pull them up. Okay, yes. So a developer, you're not doing design work at all? That's fine. So some of those would be, there's some things that it just does, like embedding fonts. Embedding fonts is supported in Silverlight, but there's a way that you, some of the syntax as well as also zipping it up into the file, like Blend does all that for you. Other things are like data templates. Data templates, I think, and this is something I'm certainly investigating more, but it's when you separate the different roles of design and development, and if you have a developer who's just developing, there's some things that you can do as a developer, which is like performance optimizations. So if you have a lot of paths that are that could be served as one path, that may be something that you do as a developer. But also some of the binding stuff. Like I mentioned, you can do two-way binding. That's all extra syntax that you may want to manage. So I would say template editing is definitely something that you want to get your mind around in Blend. It's just a lot easier there, as well as like resource management. So if you have a resource dictionary, it has the visualization of showing you each resource, and you can always flip right to the XAML. And that's one of the nice things, is that it has that sync between the design surface. You know, you click on an ellipse, it goes to the XAML of the ellipse. But then also behaviors, because if you are just doing development, then you may want to wrap up some of the functionality. And then, so getting your behavior to show up right and have the right properties exposed, if you were to go that far as encapsulating interactive logic. But I would say really around templates and resources or something. Let's see if there's anything else. It's also just in the current state of Visual Studio 2008, it has no preview for Sublight 3 because of the different cadences of all these products. But Sublight 2 did have at least a preview in Visual Studio. But not when we get to Visual Studio 2010, then we'll have the design surface again for Silverlight. But so even if you want to preview some XAML, you'd want to use something like Blend. So there's a lot there, I would say, especially when you're looking at templates. It's just a lot easier way to visualize it than looking at all that XAML in a big resource list. So it's a good question, though. Something I'm working more on. Anything else? And I'll be here all day. I'll be at the panel. Go ahead, last one. Yes.
In expression, can you do that with the XML? Because some of the XML files can become quite large.
Yes. I wish you could. Yes. The code editor has gotten a lot better, but yeah, it doesn't have expand and collapse right now. So. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Adam. Really appreciate it.
Sure.
Fantastic talk. Big round of applause for Adam, please. Thanks again. So we have lunch outside for those of you in person. For the rest of you, wherever in the world you are, grab a quick snack. Half an hour, we'll start sharp at 1. Our next presentation will be on Sketchflow. For those of you online, if you can provide some feedback as to what you'd like to hear, what your next Firestarter topic would like to be, we are taking all sorts of suggestions, so keep them coming. Mithun D@Microsoft.com or also Twitter it @SLFS. Thanks.